with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
Welcome to Nation Radio 2.0. We focus on Oilers past, present, and future, plus the NHL's biggest stories every week, and that seems to be changing by the moment. Wow, what a 24-hour period we've had. We're going to talk about that and more. We have guests including Jim Houston, Chris Vivlamore from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, also Gabriel Desjardins from Behind the Net and BehindTheNet.com, plus your calls and emails as well. Our email address, nationradio at team1260.com, and our phone line, 426-8326. On Edmonton Sports Radio, Team 1260, as you heard the guys at the Pipeline Show talking about, Sheldon Surrey on waivers this morning. Nick Kiprios had the early tweet, and then Bob McKenzie followed it up saying that nothing has been prearranged from the Oilers side. That's his understanding anyway. So we'll follow that story for the next 2 hours and get your input as well on Surrey. Here's how I see things. I don't think there's any deal, as McKenzie said, because if you're an opposition team, why on earth would you make a deal and then worry over the waiver situation, as he has to pass through all of the other 29 NHL teams? 25% of the cap hit for the rest of the year is about $675,000 by my math. Actually, it's Matt's math, but we'll go with it. And then next year, it's $2.7 million for the team picking him up. There are teams like the Montreal Canadiens. Just a real quick look at cap Geek tells us the Canadians have Markov, Hamrelik, Wisniewski, and Gill coming off the books, and that's about $16 million. I mean, it's possible. It's something that might be a situation where somebody called Steve Tambellini and said, hey, you know what, put him on there. Defensemen have exceptional value at the trade deadline. Why? Because an example would be the Buffalo Sabres in 2006. Defensemen go down nightly during that long run to the Stanley Cup final. So Sheldon Surrey on waivers. We'll be talking about that story throughout the next 2 hours, but we do have a few things we want to get to first. And the first item on the agenda is an interview I had yesterday with Jim Houston. He was on a plane and then just off the plane in Calgary getting ready for the NHL Heritage Classic. It's a very busy day for CBC today. They've got the 3 o'clock Heritage Classic countdown show at 4:30, the pregame for the doubleheader, which is Ottawa and Toronto at 5, and then the 8 o'clock game is Dallas at Vancouver. So preparing for that, and then tomorrow there's the 3 o'clock early edition of the pregame show, and then also the Heritage Classic Montreal at Calgary. So yesterday I sat down with Jim Houston, and we talked a little bit about this weekend. Well, first of all, this is your fifth classic, right?
Yes, it is.
You did all but the 2003, the first one in Edmonton.
Yeah, I have a jacket for every one of them.
There you go. Is there one that stands out as particularly memorable for you?
Well, you know, I think the first New Year's Day one in Buffalo was kind of special because it was the second one that had been done. It was the first one in the States. It was the first one on New Year's Day. And because of the circumstances, it was when it started to snow, it was that snow globe-like kind of day. And it turned into being pretty special because it really felt like you're outdoors on a lake somewhere. Even though it had an effect on the game, it was still a pretty special, and then a fitting ending when Sidney Crosby scored the shootout goal. So that one sort of stood out. But I kind of like the novel approach of being in the ballparks in Wrigley Field and in Fenway. So there's a little bit of each of them that's been kind of special. But having said all that, I think this one has the potential to be the best of the lot.
Yeah, I agree with that. The 2003 game was the first in HD, and this is going to be in 3D. So that's going to be kind of interesting too.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen 3D, it's pretty special. I mean, right now, I think it's friends and family watching 3D because, you know, most of us have just converted to HD, and it's going to be a while before there's 3D televisions in homes across the nation. But I was, I wouldn't say skeptical, but I was unsure when I first heard about 3D because I thought, you know, how much better can it get than high definition? And then I saw the Winter Classic from Fenway Park in Boston in 3D. And was blown away at how spectacular it really is. The depth perception, the detail. It's think about the best HD television set and game you've ever seen, and then multiply it by five.
Yeah, absolutely. It is spectacular. One of the classic moments that I remember in any of the games was in the dying moments of the first period. I think it was the Wrigley Field Classic. You said they shouldn't have a horn. They should have a woman who screams, supper.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought that was great.
Well, that's how we grew up playing games outdoors. And your mom would just get to, I know my mom did, just got to the, didn't go further than the front steps and just screamed as loud as she could. And I knew it was dinner time.
It cracked me up because it brought back a lot of memories for me too. Do you prepare differently for an outdoor game? I know obviously you do, but in terms of the amount of information that you grab about the game, it still counts in the standings, but there's so much pageantry going on aside from that. Do you prepare a little differently?
Only in that you want to know a little bit more about the surroundings, but largely it is the game's the thing. And so in that sense, no. And that's why, especially for this one, with Calgary in the position that they're in, fighting tooth and nail for a playoff spot, and the Canadians with a chance to still win their division and not out of the woods yet in terms of getting far enough ahead of eighth spot or ninth spot in the Eastern Conference, it means so much that you never want to lose sight of the fact that the game is the thing. It's the game, and that's why I think this one will be special, because in the other ones that I've been involved in, the spectacle was the thing, the event was the big deal, not so much the game. And it didn't really matter on the 1st of January, or in the case of the first Heritage game, it was November 22nd, 20 games into the season. And in those events, yeah, there were points up for grabs, but, you know, in the big scheme of things, it didn't really matter if you missed out on a point on New Year's Day. And this one, it means an awful lot. So in terms of preparation, you can't forget that the game is really an important one.
I think also with this game that's a little different, at least from where we are here in Edmonton, is that there was so much exciting going on with the All-Star break and all of that stuff, and then, of course, Hockey Day in Canada, which was huge across the nation, that there was a real quick turnaround for this. So excitement might not have been great early, but there seems to be a lot this week, just in Calgary, but also in Edmonton and around the nation.
Yeah, I agree with you. It just sort of snuck up on everybody. And even with the NHL people, the special events people that work on these sorts of things, they've been so busy with the other events that they took a while to get to this one. But it is really building now, and you can tell just from arriving in Calgary this morning and being around the hotel and out and about downtown, it's evident that there's something big going on, and it's all about hockey. And I'm looking forward to seeing McMahon Stadium this afternoon in the event plaza, because one of the things that the league has done a really nice job of is turning this whole event into more than just the game. There's all sorts of things going on around the game, mm-hmm. and that everybody can take part in, and they did a great job of that in Pittsburgh, and I suspect they will here too, although it's just a little colder for standing around outside.
Yeah, they did a good job with, I think, bringing the Abbotsford Heat in, along with the Barons, the Oilers AHL affiliate, the junior game, and there just seems like a lot of activity going, not just on the particular day, but the entire weekend and into Holiday Monday.
Yeah, and it's you know, it's a tough one, I'm sure, if you're buying all the tickets. I mean, it's a busy weekend. You get the Friday night game at the Saddle Dome. You've got Saturday the alumni game that people are going to. You got the big game on Sunday, and then the Western Hockey League game on Monday outside. So it's it is a long weekend here. So it's, if you're a hockey fan, it's a full weekend. And then there's some really good bands coming in, and really there's all sorts of music. There's all sorts of things going on, and there's quite a few events around town. I know tonight and tomorrow night. It'll be fun to take part in.
Absolutely. We can switch gears a little bit. I wanted to get your input on, I follow Hockey Day in Canada as a fan, but also as a broadcaster. And I know you probably looked at these numbers, but the overnight BBMs for Hockey Day in Canada were monstrous this year. And I'm getting a lot of feedback from people saying one of the reasons they tuned in and stayed tuned in was the quality of the reporting and the great stories. CBC really does spend a lot of time on that day leading up to it.
Yeah, they do, and it's the producer of that event, Mike Dodson, pretty much works on a year-round. So, you know, he'll just take a rest right now, and then they'll pick a venue for next year, and he'll get started on a theme, and they turn it into, much like what we're seeing in the Winter Classic and the Heritage Classic, it becomes more than just the game, more than just one event. They turn it into a Hockey Day in Canada, if you're in the particular venue, becomes a week-long event with all sorts of different things, in, you know, culturally and in terms of sport going on for the entire week. And they spend a whole year preparing the reporting and preparing the features and looking at the pictures and thinking about the kinds of things that they can get involved. I love to watch it, and I think one of the reasons, another reason that I wanted to tune in this year is because I was fascinated by the fact that it was in Whitehorse.
Yeah.
And wanted to see the visuals and wasn't disappointed at all. So, you know, I'm sure there were a lot of people that thought that the venue was unique this year and that drew people as well. But it's also become a part of our calendar now. And if you notice during the broadcast, you find more so now than ever before, it's a place that people want to be. Whether they're politicians or former players or executives, they make time to get to Hockey Day in Canada. And you start to see them pop up on the television all day because it's a place to be seen and it's an event to be a part of. And that's kind of cool that it's become that now.
Well, I was just astounded looking at numbers. 845,000 for the first game, 2.3 million for the second game, and the late game 1.4. But the item between the first game, the Ottawa game, and the Toronto-Montreal game, the Celebrating the Game Part 2, 647,000. Did you ever think we would get to a point where that many Canadians are watching on a Saturday afternoon on an all-day event like that?
Yeah, I'm not surprised at that because of the way the game has gone in our country and what it means to all of us. I think that'll go up. I think it'll get better because I think as time goes on, as I mentioned before, it's become a part of our winter. It's become a day that we look forward to. It's a part of our culture and heritage now. And it's been around long enough and established long enough that everybody knows about it. And I just think it'll keep going up. It'll be even bigger and bigger and bigger as time goes on. Look what's happened in our hockey arenas. If you just want to, you know, compare it to what's gone on in the six Canadian cities and how the game is treated, we thought, you know, I thought years ago that you couldn't get the interest any higher, but, you know, in all the Canadian cities, you can't get a ticket to a hockey game. You get people now, I know where I live in Vancouver, you can't get a ticket, and people flood to the downtown on the days of a game just to be down around the arena and go to the bars and go to the restaurants and be downtown on game day. And I see that going on in Toronto, and I see it going on in Montreal and all over the National Hockey League in Canada. So the game's a pretty big deal in our country. So none of the numbers really surprise me at all.
Hopefully we'll get a new arena downtown in Edmonton and be able to do the same thing.
And then people do the same thing there too, yeah.
In conversation with Jim Houston from Hockey Night in Canada. Jim, you called some of both the 1982 and 1994 Stanley Cup Finals involving the Canucks, correct?
No, I called the 82 series, but I didn't call 94.
Oh, okay, I thought you'd done some television for 94.
No, I was I was working at a different network at that time.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
So I was watching it on TV. I was working at TSN at that time, and the games were on CBC.
Right. Do you think this team, I know that you've followed the Canucks, and you've obviously, as a broadcaster, been a big part of the Canucks over the last many years. Do you think this team has a chance to be better than that very good 1994 Canuck team?
Yeah, I do. I think it's the best team they've ever had in 40 years. I think it's the best team Vancouver's ever had. Now, there's so many variables that go into all of this, and you know, one of them is the injury, and their defense is decimated right now. They've got five guys out, and that makes a difference. But in the years that I've watched them and followed them, and you know, when I compare them to other teams, this is the most businesslike team I've ever seen, and it's the team. There have been other teams in Vancouver where they look pretty good, and there was a lot of hope involved in, you know, whether they could, you know, do some damage in the playoffs. This is a team that's not based on hope. The expectations for this team are based on fact, that this is a really good hockey team that's as good as any team in the National Hockey League right now. And if they get a fair playing field in the playoffs where, you know, they can ice as good a lineup as most teams can, because everybody's banged up by the time they get to the playoffs, then I think that they have a really good, legitimate chance to play for the Cup.
Are these injuries to the defensemen? From what I read, they're injuries that aren't going to be long-term. I mean, they'll be back in time for the playoffs. So there is that as a positive for Canucks fans.
Yeah, and you know what? They've built a bit of a cushion right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the points that they have in the bank put them in pretty good shape here to get by without a few defensemen. And the injuries are are interesting ones in the financial sense in the NHL, in that a few of them aren't serious enough to have guys go on the long-term injury list, but they're serious enough to keep them out for a while. And sometimes in hockey, you want, if a guy's going to get hurt, please get hurt enough so that we can put you on LTI.
Right, exactly.
Because then we can save some money. Because they're right up against the cap, and they have problems filling the spots because they can't afford it against the cap. But I think within a week, they'll have Keith Ballard and Dan Hamhuis back, by the sounds of it. And, you know, they get those two back, and you've still got Sammy Salo and Christian Ehrhoff in the lineup, so they're in pretty good shape to get through the next couple of weeks before they get everybody else back. And by playoff time, if nobody else goes down, by playoff time, they should have a full complement.
That's the one thing I notice about the Canucks this year more than anything, is they have great players, but they also have great depth at all positions. So it's going to be an interesting run.
They do.
Switching gears a little bit, you called the Thursday night game, Habs-Oilers, and that was an interesting game, probably for Oiler fans, the opening night game against Calgary and that home game against the Habs on Thursday are the two best games of the year. What's your impression of those young Oilers?
Well, my first impression has been, as I've watched them all year, but to see them in that game was how fast they are, and the skill level I really like, but fast was a good thing. That's as loose a hockey game as I've seen this year in the NHL. And, you know, the Canadians just don't play that way. They're shockingly loose. They play a pretty good, tight defensive game, and they couldn't do it at all. Boy, there was a track meet through the neutral zone in that hockey game with these two teams, and they were pretty loose defensively in their own end. But, you know, while I think the Oilers defense really needs some work, I look at the youth and the skill up front, and I see the goal that Jordan Eberle scored, that's just a goal scorer's goal. That's a hard shot to make. And they scored 15 seconds after that, largely because I think Carey Price still couldn't believe that the kid beat him with that shot. And then I see some really the things that everybody knows that Taylor Hall is getting better all the time, and he's getting a lot smarter. Magnus Pjärvi looks really interesting to me because he's a big, strong guy now,
yep.
And that's as much as anything what they need, in my opinion, is they've got the skill and they've got the speed, but I don't see as much size as I'd like to see, and a real power winger, but he looks like he might be that. So there's a great deal of promise there, you know. When you see the games like the one against Anaheim the week before, I'm sure that there's a lot of fans went away shaking their head and thinking, is this developmental program, is this rebuild actually going to work, or is this what we're going to be seeing for the next couple of years? And then, you know, a week later, you see them play Montreal, and you see how fast and exciting they can be, and you can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a train coming the other way.
Yeah, for sure. Two quick ones before we let you go, Jim, and we do appreciate your time. The Toronto Maple Leafs made a trade today. Boston made two of them, one sending Rich Peverly and Boris Valabek to Atlanta for Blake Wheeler and Mark Stewart, and then that gave them some cap relief to deal for Thomas Cabrelle in a deal that has just been called. So picking up draft picks on the Toronto side, and Joel Colborne, a great prospect. What's your opinion there in terms of Boston and then Toronto?
I think Boston's pretty desperate right now. And I think they collected some draft picks and they collected some young players, and so they can afford to make these deals. And they've paid, in my opinion, they've paid a pretty hefty price. But they're a team that has some expectations from the ownership level to their fans. They're expected to compete for the championship of the Eastern Conference, and they haven't been as good as they had hoped to be. And they can look up the standings and see the Philadelphia Flyers as the standard bearer in the Eastern Conference, and they don't measure up. And so Peter Chiarelli's had to make some moves, in my opinion, to try and be good enough to at least battle and give themselves a chance to win the Eastern Conference. So he's paid a hefty price. He gets a guy who might be able to make their power play better in Cabrelle. He had to trade a pretty good defenseman in Mark Stewart and a good young player in Blake Wheeler just to get cap room, and that's basically what that deal's all about. And so there's some risk involved in it. He gave up a pretty high price to get Chris Kelly, too. But you know what? When you accrue those picks and you accrue the young players and you realize that it's time to go for it, then you can afford to pay a pretty high price. And that's what Boston's done, and I'm still not sure if they're going to be good enough. For Toronto, things start to look a lot better. Now they've got a couple of first-round picks from the deals that they've made with Versteeg and with this deal, and a big center iceman. If Joel Colborne is as good as everybody seems to think he might be, he could be he's a 6'5", 200-pound guy, and he's still young. And they got to hope that he is as good as his credentials are supposed to be, and that he's a good first line, front line center for a long time. And if he is, then Brian Burke's had himself a pretty good couple of days here.
I do know that the Oilers back at Colburn's draft were high on him, and as it turns out, every big center the Oilers are high on that they don't draft turns into a big star. So,
yeah, so then, so he's a lead pipe stitch.
Yeah. And one more final thing, Jim Houston, I can't let this go without mentioning that I am a lifelong Montreal Expos fan, and I enjoyed your calls with Kenny Singleton, and the biggest heartbreak of my whole adult life was the strike year, because that was a great, great ball club.
Boy, you're going to have to get over it. Finally.
I'll try.
It was the year. That was a great ball team.
It really was.
The Montreal Expos were a really good team. They had terrific personalities. There was just a really good feel about baseball in Montreal. It was a sad, sad day for me when it left town, even though the Big O was never a particularly good place to go to a ball game,
no.
In my opinion. The teams that were there made it good. There's nothing better than going to the city of Montreal in the middle of the summertime and hanging out and watching the Expos and the Dodgers and just wandering around town. It was those were really good days with really good teams. It's just too bad they didn't get a World Series before they had to leave town.
Jim, I know it's a very busy day so for you, and I really thank you for your time. Have a great day.
A pleasure. See you later.
Yep. That's Jim Houston from Hockey Night in Canada, and talking a little bit, among other things, about the Heritage Classic. Tomorrow, they're live in 3D for McMahon at 3 o'clock at the Tim Hortons NHL Heritage Classic pregame, and the game goes at 4 o'clock, Montreal versus Calgary. That was a delight. I really enjoyed that. Jim Houston, a great guy, and somebody, obviously, I've been watching on television for decades now, if you can believe that, and enjoyed it very much. We've got lots to get to today. The Oilers are playing in about an hour from right now. Every time I'm on the air here, they're in action. I don't know what that's about. We've got some breaking news in terms of Sheldon Surrey on waivers, and later on in the hour, we'll be talking to a gentleman from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution a little bit about the trade they made yesterday, and also looking forward possibly to Zach Bogosian going somewhere. It's possible. We'll talk about that and more. We'll take a break right now. Back with Nation Radio after this.